Insurance professionals work hard every day to keep people safe. But as technology transforms the industry, how can insurers protect not only their clients, but also shield themselves from ever-changing cyber risks? My name's Elizabeth Blossfield, and I'm the host of the Insuring Cyber Podcast, a bi-monthly look into how the world of cyber and the business of insurance are connected. It's been more than a year since lockdowns began on March 11th of 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic. During this time, many workplaces have shifted their operations from in-office to remote, some for the first time. And although we have 12 months of learning and adjusting to the so-called new normal under our belts, for many of us, there's still a lot of learning to do. As my guests and I will discuss on this episode, one area where the learning is ongoing centers around work-from-home cyber risks. Globally, companies that quickly shifted to a remote environment have had to reassess their cyber incident response plan and reevaluate their cyber insurance coverage as they reckon with additional risks that come from having employees working at home. Jerry Ray, Chief Operating Officer of enterprise data security and encryption business SecureAge, spoke with me from where he's based in Singapore about what he's seeing in terms of added work-from-home cyber risks and how companies are tackling this challenge. Here's our conversation. Hi, Jerry. It's great to be speaking with you. How are you doing?
Wonderful. Thanks so much for having me on, Elizabeth. Pleasure to be here with you and all your listeners.
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking forward to the conversation. So I know that there's been a lot of talk about how the shift to work from home, especially due to the pandemic, has brought on additional cyber risks. Do you think that these new work from home risks are here to stay, or do you see things returning to normal as more employees head back to the office?
For certain, they're here to stay. Regardless of people going back into the office or not, so many changes have taken place in both the security infrastructure that's had to be built around work from home, as well as employees' habits and practices. Companies are going to have to take a sort of two-pointed approach to say, here's how we want you to operate again in our structure and in our confines of having some type of peripheral around our network inside the office. However, understanding that you enjoyed a different level of freedom by working from home, here's what we'll allow you to do the way you were able to do it out of the confines of the office. And for example of that, many people are at home, and if they find their computer issued by the company a bit too restrictive, they're going to be on their cell phone, or they're going to be on a second personal computer that's owned by them to do the things they needed to do to get around whatever type of security structures were put in place.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And kind of going along with that, you know, I was just curious, how is the workplace changing and what are businesses doing to minimize cyber incidents while employees are working from home? You know, are you seeing a lot more businesses regulating device usage or implementing password protocols, for example?
Oh, for sure. There's so many additional risks that come from working from home. And like I referred to a moment ago, that people have their own devices. Not only do they have their own pieces of equipment sitting beside them, they've got unknown people. not to disparage people's families, but people aren't just working from home. They're working in cafes. They're working in public places. They're working in parks or outdoor locales that they otherwise would have never been sitting in. And this opens up so many possible points of entry. So with this, you know, multi-factor authentication for certain, but once you've authenticated yourself and that computer is sitting open, you've got additional risks there as well. So there's For example, new timeout limits that you may have to re-log in after a much shorter period than you would have when you were in the office. That's just a very basic one, but there's a tremendous amount of change that's coming across the board for trying to predict and account for what could possibly happen in someone's home with unknown actors in the house. And by actors, I want to put that in the good light. Just innocent family members or roommates. You know, many people are living with people they don't know. And we find that particularly here in Asia, where I'm based right now, that many people, especially younger ones, still share dwellings, and where they live is not conducive to getting work done on their own. They're often having to share very small spaces, a countertop, a sofa, coffee tables, things like that. So the things that companies are putting in place are so varied and so disparate that I can't just point to these few as being the answer. Every locale I've been able to interact with has some particular cyber-related issue that I never considered that is somewhat akin to their culture or related to the way people are living or the different types of age groups or otherwise that are surrounding the person who's accessing very critical information from a company.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point about the way that people are living and sharing spaces right now. I'm sure that would bring on additional cyber risk. And then speaking on the side of insurance in particular, are there any cyber coverage gaps that you're seeing right now that are being emphasized while people are working from home? And, you know, what are some of the cyber incidents that could potentially invalidate coverage?
Perhaps one of the biggest are willful acts. And not just negligence, but something that's willful. And when I say willful, you know, oftentimes in my understanding of some of the policies I'm seeing, the covenants therein were that malicious acts, malcontents, anyone who is coming in with the intention to do something wrong may invalidate any of the coverage that was offered. And in some cases, it's not the actual user or the employee who's doing something malicious. However, skilled actors are good enough to have taken valid login credentials. They're able to bypass multi-factor protocols, get in and make it appear as if an employee was actually doing something malicious or something to invalidate that policy. So, and I don't mean with the intention to invalidate, but whatever they did would have invalidated it because it appears that this employee was actually acting in bad faith and doing something wrong. In some cases, it will be. Certainly, you always have the insider threat, but most of the time, it's not. It's someone being compromised. And the risk of compromise has gone up dramatically by people working at home.
Yeah, sure. That makes sense. And then, you know, I've heard a lot of talk about how there needs to be more of a unified standard among cyber insurance policies in terms of how the coverage responds to an attack. Is this something you see as becoming more important now as work from home is creating more cyber risk?
Most definitely. It's very hard for companies to appreciate their own risk. It's hard for them to understand the reasons for the policy. I see many companies not opting in or not considering policies the way they should, simply because they can't gauge the extent of their own exposure. The more that those policies are unified, for example, a homeowner's policy or auto insurance, it's very simple for people to understand what those are. They can look across three or four different providers and have a sense of the questions that'll be asked, the type coverages that are provided, and it's, you know, it comes down to the intangibles and when they'll make those decisions. Right now, the cyber policies that I'm familiar with are very different, quite dramatically different in terms of what they'll cover, the extent to which they'll cover, and beyond that, what they will do to help the company not suffer the attack in the first place. So I think I don't want to put the onus on the insurers themselves. It seems like this is going to be inevitable, that over time, as the customers become more sophisticated, as they become aware of what's offered across different insurers' policies, they will start making some comparisons. And the insurers that don't provide option A, B, or C won't be as competitive as those that do. If the insurance providers could get together, if they could unify their response in a way that doesn't harm them competitively, then it would just be better for everyone overall. They're always going to act more quickly. They understand risk better. And certainly they know what types of things their own customers have been suffering over the years that cyber policies have been available.
Right. That makes sense. Great. And then given everything that we've talked about so far, you know, what advice would you give to businesses who are reevaluating their cyber coverage right now because of these new work from home risks?
Get it. Certainly just dig in deeper, get cyber coverage, understand it, and work with insurance providers who will coach you along the way. Ones that will, within the policy and within the coverage, you know, learn how to better protect your infrastructure. It's certainly not enough to get insurance and just take those steps that will be certain not to invalidate your policy. That, okay, the insurer is going to give me this type of coverage. However, I need to put this tool in place or have these protocols in place or this type of manual system in place. I mean, that's great. That's wonderful. But every potential insurance buyer also needs to understand their own infrastructure better. The insurers are great at understanding a broad scale measure of risk for everyone, but only these customers know what they have and the value of what they have. Certainly things like the intangibles, their reputation is one thing. The tangibles, those of my infrastructure cost or the data itself, what's the value or the value of lost business during downtime, those the insurance provider is much better able to gauge. And I think customers should appeal to them, learn about that, understand that better, dig into the different policy offerings that are out there and make sure they're covered that way. Beyond that, dig in further to their own risk. See what the real value of their business is. See what the vulnerabilities are to the business without even thinking cyber, and then work backwards and say, okay, if this is where all of our effort and energy results in profit, where does that finally touch something digital? And in that little junction between their offering and some digital record of it, that's what they have to cover wholesale. And whether that can be something they can recoup through cyber insurance or whether it's something that simply can't ever be gained through cyber insurance, either because there certainly won't be enough of it or that it just doesn't exist, like the loss of reputation. That's almost impossible to have real coverage for. That was a real convoluted way of saying that businesses need to have it. It is as essential as car insurance. And I know of very, very few businesses left on the planet that don't have some nexus in the cyber world and that could be hurt through some type of attack or otherwise. So, you know, get the insurance, understand it, and work with the insurance providers to get smarter about their own risk.
Yeah, that's all great advice. And this has been a really interesting conversation. So thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Thanks for having me.
According to Global Workplace Analytics Global Work From Home Experience Survey, it's estimated that 56% of the U.S. workforce holds jobs that are work from home compatible, at least partially, and 25 to 30% of the workforce will likely remain working at home for multiple days per week by the end of 2021. The survey goes on to say that although expedited by the COVID crisis, demand for flexibility in where and how people work has been building for years. Before the crisis, its survey repeatedly showed that the majority of employees want to work from home at least some of the time. Although some say this new work from home environment is here to stay, at least in part, this means cyber criminals are increasingly finding new incentive to exploit user data while employees are home-based. Tim Francis, enterprise lead for cyber insurance at insurance company Travelers, spoke with me about data privacy issues during the pandemic, how underwriting is evolving as a result, and how insurers can better work with their clients to make sure they have the right coverage. Listen to what he had to say. Hi, Tim. It's great to be speaking with you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Yeah, thanks for taking the time to speak with me. I know that data privacy has been a big topic of discussion recently, and you know, especially during the pandemic, it's even more of a concern as many employees are working from home. So I was curious just to start off, how are cyber criminals finding new ways to exploit user data while more people are working remotely?
Yeah, it's been interesting, and a lot has developed since we're now almost almost exactly a year into the pandemic, and probably more a year into when we saw really a shift from the work from home. And I think there was a heightened risk, particularly in the early days and weeks of that, not just because there was more employees working from home, but the speed of the shift, right? I mean, almost virtually overnight, and in some cases, literally overnight, organizations went from having, you know, some or all of their employees who traditionally didn't work from home or work remotely to do so. And so some of the security, some of the infrastructure, some of the software that would ordinarily be put in place, had you had more time to kind of ramp up to that, wasn't put in place. And so particularly as people were working from home and connecting into their workstations and into their corporate networks through either devices that were not necessarily secure and routers that were not necessarily secure, and not just connecting, but then receiving information back into the, through these routers and through the into these devices that were not necessarily as secure as they would have been, did cause some concern. The truth of the matter is it didn't manifest into as a significant problem as we thought it might, but yet it's unfortunately still also persists even about a year later, where, for example, we are still seeing some of what we would call the way that organizations connect, different ports that might be used to connect, not to get too technical, are still open and configured in a way that is far less secure than some other options. And we're, you know, advising customers to close certain ports or really, you know, advise them to configure their systems in different ways that are potentially more secure. But it is, you know, a problem that is still out there, and also a concern that is, organizations start to return or have been starting to return some of their employees to a work environment, you know, some of those devices that may still be out there, less secure, may be infected with malware that, you know, could also get, you know, put into the organization's network, you know, once they return. So we're looking at that aspect of it as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's a good lead into my next question as well, because, you know, I've heard a lot over the past couple of years about the importance of multi-factor authentication for mitigating cyber risk, and especially right now as a lot of people are working from home and on devices, like you said. Can you talk about multi-factor authentication and why businesses should be using it as cyber risks continue to escalate?
Sure. And so just, you know, for the listeners that may not know, right, when we talk about multi-factor authentication, you know, really those factors boil down to generally, you know, something you know, like a password, something you have, perhaps your phone is a physical device, or something that you are, like a fingerprint or your facial recognition. And so, you know, having one of those is more easily compromised. So in other words, if you're just accessing the system with a password, the threat actors are pretty good at either guessing the password or finding the actual password, or, and they're not, you know, they're using software to run potential, you know, applications to crack those codes. And that's why, you know, you get advised not to use, you know, not to make your password 1234 or 1234, which still happens, right? And so having tough passwords is good, but having a password that on its own doesn't let you in, but, you know, you get a code to your cell phone and you enter that in too, that creates a level of security that isn't impenetrable. It is, but it's just a barrier that will now exist for the threat actors, where you've made it that much harder for them to get access to the system, and they're opportunistic. So they're going to, in some cases, kind of go to where the low hanging fruit is and go after organizations that don't have that level of security. So multi-factor is really also something that shows up frequently in ransomware claims. And when I say shows up, meaning we have, you know, seen, you know, a significant amount of ransomware claims generally, as has the industry. And often, as we look at how did the threat actors get into the system, or more likely kind of transcend laterally through the system to perpetrate this, it's a lack of multi-factor authentication, either for the initial remote access or also having multi-factor authentication on what we call administrative access or privileged access. So they're essentially, once they get into as an administrator, really have the keys to the kingdom, and they can operate as if they are the same person that has the authority to change the system controls. And when that happens, you have ransomware, you have any number of events that occur that can be, you know, very costly and certainly very disruptive to the organization.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, especially because ransomware has been such a big consideration right now. And, you know, as we've seen through various state cybersecurity regulations and also just the way that cyber attacks are changing, I've heard it's becoming even more important for businesses to respond very quickly to an attack. So as businesses have shifted to work from home, how should their response plan be changing to respond quickly in the event of an attack, even while, you know, their business and employees are spread out in home offices?
It's a great question. And you're exactly right to ask about that relative to kind of this working environment that we're all in. And everybody's working environment is different in terms of how they're doing this. It was always important to know if an event took place, who in the organization was responsible for what. And we've encouraged all of our customers historically to have an incident response plan. Most of those incident, we encourage them not only have the incident response plan, but you have tested and practiced that incident response plan. And that's true of cyber. It's true of other things. You know, what if there was a natural disaster? What if there was X, Y, and Z? How would you react? And so for those organizations that don't have an incident response plan, the advice is still the same. Get one. And we share with our customers, you know, some best practices around incident response plans if they don't have them, or direct them to experts that can help them even beyond just kind of the basics of an incident response plan. So number one, get it. Number two, if you had an incident response plan, but you tested it, but you haven't tested it in light of potentially and likely new working arrangements, you ought to do that too. Because now, does everybody even know how to contact their, you know, necessary colleagues internally or folks externally if your systems were down? Do you even know what folks' phone numbers are, and maybe even have that, some of that stored separately or even written down to some extent, right? So testing it in whatever an organization's new environment is critical to know, you know, would that same incident response plan that you had in place pre-COVID work in a post-COVID post-COVID working arrangement?
Yeah, that's great advice. And then for insurers in particular, you know, what can some of these new work from home cyber risks mean for the coverage? Are you seeing any changes to cyber coverage as a result of the shift to remote work?
Yeah, I think less right now changes in coverage. And there's a lot, as I said, a lot happening with ransomware that likely would have happened regardless of work from home, but is continuing to happen despite work from home. And it just makes the response, you know, that much more complex potentially for organizations and, you know, for forensics providers, et cetera. So it's less about coverage. I think we're starting to see more in terms of underwriting or risk analysis, more questions being asked about how organizations are managing work from home, whether that's increased, what's the security behind that, what are the plans, you know, to bring some of that back into the network if they haven't done so. So you're seeing some things happening in that realm, but less really happening in the coverage realm because of work from home.
Yeah, sure. And then how can insurers be advising their clients who are working from home to make sure that the right cyber coverage is in place for them?
Well, I think number one, it's always good advice, right? So insurers should be working with an agent who is securing coverage for them that is knowledgeable about cybersecurity issues, number one, but certainly cyber insurance, right? Cyber insurance being their forte. And so it's always a good practice to make sure that the insurance that's purchased works for that customer's risk transfer objectives. And, you know, while it's, I think, unlikely that there might be some exclusions in place that apply, it's important to look at that. Does the definition of a computer system or employee or whatever, you know, work in the context of a work from home environment? And so the agent can help guide the customer through that, and frankly, ought to be guiding the customer through that. I also think it's important to look at the cyber insurance carrier that an organization may choose beyond just the policy. So, you know, we talked about some of the risk management strategies, whether it be an incident response plan or, you know, best practices around work from home to prevent the risk from happening in the first place, to prevent the cyber attack from happening, or should it happen, to have the plan in place and have access to the battery of cybersecurity professionals that, you know, insurers can bring to bear, and to think about all of those things, and to think about cyber insurance to be not just, and maybe not even mostly, the words on the page and what they do for coverage, but, you know, is there risk management services that are available to be taken advantage of? Is there kind of ongoing awareness made of new vulnerabilities should they occur, and to think through those things, and the agents and the brokers can certainly advise customers on what's best for them and their particular situation and the uniqueness of their organization.
Great. Well, Tim, this has been a great conversation. So thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
My pleasure.
That's all the time we have for this episode. Thanks to Jerry and Tim for taking the time to speak with me, and thanks to everyone who tuned in. Once again, my name's Elizabeth Blossfield, and I'm the host of the Insuring Cyber Podcast, a bi-monthly look into how the world of cyber and the business of insurance are connected. Check back for new episodes every other Wednesday, and thanks for listening.